Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. So many minors are deported to Honduras these days that there's a special compound that was built just to receive them. It's in San Pedro Sula, made up of a few buildings surrounded by a big red wall. Outside that wall, it's a pretty festive scene. It's Friday afternoon, and a bus full of deportees from Mexico just came in. Their family members wait outside to pick them up. Jose Hernandez is there. He holds a single light blue balloon and wears a pressed shirt, looking like he belongs at a baby shower. Jose is here to pick up his wife and kids. Just 15 days ago, he waved goodbye to them as they took off on a journey north towards the United States. They made it pretty far, through Guatemala, about halfway through Mexico, but eventually they were stopped by La Migra and sent back. The door of the compound opens, and Jose's kids rush into his arms. Jose gives his two-year-old son the balloon and kisses him on the cheek repeatedly. The kid is crying, but you can't blame him. He's had a big day.
Abigail.
Jose's five-year-old daughter, Abigail, is asked why she wanted to leave Honduras.
No. Yo quería estar con mi papi.
I didn't, she says. I wanted to stay here with my papi.
Me alegro tenerlos, pues, de nuevo.
It makes me very happy, says Jose, to have them back. He's visibly emotional. They leave, and then you don't know if you're ever going to see them again.
La gente sale para allá y no sabe uno si los puede volver a ver.
But for Jose and all the families here, the reunions are bittersweet. Everybody's happy to be back together, but they're disappointed too. After taking such a big bet, risking their lives and their savings, they're disappointed to be back in Honduras, back where they started, instead of starting a new life in the United States. And what they're coming back to, well, it can be complicated. Remember the kids that were showing up at the border this summer? More came from Honduras than any other country. 18,000 of them. But it's not just kids. Over the last few years, immigration from Honduras has increased faster than anywhere else in Central America. More and more Hondurans of all ages are leaving their homes and risking everything for a chance to reach the United States. Today, we're going to spend an hour asking why. What's happening in Honduras right now that's causing so many people to leave? Our producer, Marlon Bishop, recently visited Honduras to help us figure out the answer. Hey, Marlon, we are so glad that you're back and safe.
Hey, Maria, it's good to be back here.
So you had never really spent a tremendous amount of time in Honduras doing deep reporting. You went down, spent several weeks. So what did you find out?
Well, I spent a few weeks traveling around Honduras. I was meeting with journalists, officials, all sorts of people. And my goal was to try to understand what is this sense of crisis that was happening in Honduras right now. And kind of the first thing that you notice really is that when you talk to people, almost everyone you speak to has this really close relationship with homicide, with murder, because almost everyone has someone close to them that's been murdered. And that's because the murder rate in Honduras is so high. It's the highest in the world.
Oh my God, it sounds extraordinary. So how high is it to be the murder capital of the world?
The murder rate is almost one in every 1,000 people. To give you a sense, that's twice as high as the country with the second highest murder rate in the world, which is Venezuela. It is literally on a different scale.
But here's what I don't understand, because it's part of this, you know, region, Central America, but it has a different experience, Honduras does. So historically, how does Honduras end up like this?
Well, I wanted to know that too. So I called up a guy named Eric Olson, a Central America expert who works at the Woodrow Wilson Institute. And he told me that the story actually starts with bananas.
There's no question that the fruit companies, the U.S. Embassy in Tegucigalpa, the capital, played an outside role in deciding the future of the country.
We're talking like what, like Dole, Chiquita Banana?
Exactly. In fact, the original companies behind those two brands, Standard Fruit and United Fruit, were the dominant players in the Honduran economy for a really long time. They owned a huge percentage of the country's land and often treated Honduras as if it was their personal fiefdom or something. In fact, Honduras is one of the countries that gave us the stereotype of the Banana Republic. At times, the companies literally ran the country.
One of the lawyers for the fruit companies became president in 1954 at a critical moment.
Olson told me that as a result, the country basically served the fruit industry, and Honduras never had the chance to develop a modern economy. Then, on top of that, there are the oligarchs.
So oligarchs, like elite families that like essentially run the country?
Right.
A handful of families not only are major outsized economic powers, but also own newspapers, radio stations, also bankroll political parties.
Honduras is one of the top 10 most unequal countries in the world. All the time while I was there, I heard about these 13 families that basically run everything. Some of them even have their own private militias. The U.S. supported this oligarchy for a really long time because they opposed communism, and that used to be a big thing. Today, they basically run the economy to meet their needs, not the people's.
So when the economy is weak, of course, it's very hard to have really strong and healthy government institutions.
It doesn't have strong police. It doesn't have strong courts or a justice system. Its education system is weak. Its healthcare system, because its agencies of government are weak, the ability of the country to resist against criminal organizations is quite limited.
So from afar, it really sounds pretty bleak. But did it feel that way to you on the ground with the people of Honduras?
Well, Honduras is definitely in a very tough situation. There's no way around that. But I often found myself feeling really inspired when I was there by these kind of amazing displays of bravery that I would see. For example, these journalists that I was working with, they would receive death threats all the time. And still, they would get up and go out and report the news and try to make Honduras a better place. You know, and I saw this kind of bravery all the time from, you know, an ex-gang member working to help kids find a better path, to a 15-year-old kid leaving his whole world behind to immigrate to the United States so he could support his family. I mean, just imagine doing that